Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
Who's got the top six forwards in all of professional hockey?
The New York Rangers, Mike.
Ah, yes. Let's go, Rangers.
I'm so torn because, as longtime listeners of this podcast will know, I freaked the hell out in a positive way when the Blackhawks got Artemi Panarin from the KHL. I had legitimately been following him in the KHL, and I lost my mind when it was announced that they signed him and he came to play for the Chicago Blackhawks. The next two seasons of Artemi Panarin and Patrick Kane playing together was, while the Blackhawks didn't win a Stanley Cup, they didn't make a Stanley Cup run. Just as far as watching two players play on the ice together, I've never enjoyed watching hockey more than watching Patrick Kane and Artemi Panarin play together. So there's part of me that's thrilled that those two men are playing together again, at least through the end of this regular season and the playoffs. But it has to be for the Rangers, and it has to make you happy.
It does. And it's also helped to revitalize me when it comes to hockey this year. Not as a Rangers fan, but just as a viewer. It has been very difficult. I've had a lot going on, it's just life. So it's been difficult to actually keep up with everything other than just seeing results and seeing what's going on in print. And the Tarasenko deal was one where it was like, okay, they're serious. There's been talk about, just you see things in here and there about like how players want to be in New York and how they want to play for the Rangers. And it's like, as a longtime Ranger fan and as a longtime Dolan hater, that always like, that's not true. And then now it seems to be the case where no, people do want to go play in New York and they do want to be Rangers. And apparently this whole deal was facilitated by the fact that Patrick Kane said, yeah, that's where I want to go. That's where I want to play. The same way that Panarin said, yeah, that's where I want to go. That's where I want to play. And apparently they aren't the only two. So no matter how bad the Dolans are at running things or just being, functional, like decent human beings, well, you know what? At least when it comes to the stick and puck, as a fan, I can be happy.
I'm happy for you, legitimately. I'm sad, but I was going to be sad
You
either
had
way
a cup.
because
You got a cup. I haven't had a
I
cup since 94.
got three of them. Again, I'm legitimately happy for you. I'm bummed, but again, I was going to be bummed either way because the Blackhawks are terrible by design and they're going to be terrible by design for several more years. After that Montreal Canadiens mirage of a couple of years ago, them making that Stanley Cup run, they're basically in the exact same spot the Blackhawks are in an early part of a long rebuild. So hopefully you can at least get some joy out of hockey. I will say just a quick point on the NHL, and you mentioned kind of having a harder time staying in touch with what's going on this season. I really feel like part of the I don't know, less appeal of the regular season is the way that the whatever it's been the last 5, 6 years, maybe longer of the playoff format as far as who gets in. Before we had it where it was just the three division leaders and then the next five teams. And it's a much more convoluted system now. It's a much more division heavy system that seems to make playoff races end a lot earlier in the regular season. Like it feels like we've known that the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to play in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs since like November.
Yeah, well,
It's just one example of
yeah.
that lack of drama for the most part that there is in the regular season right now.
Baseball,
Sure.
baseball level for a lot of
Yeah.
people, really is. And that's, and there's going to be another thing too, and we won't beat this to death. But when it comes to baseball and hockey and some basketball teams and whatever happens with Sinclair and Diamond and the Bally Sports
Yeah.
Networks and all of
RSN
that.
Armageddon.
We're almost at a D-Day soon when it comes to baseball, where Sinclair and all of them have said, the holding group has said, take back your rights, figure out what you're going to do with them. Major League Baseball has already started to get together to figure out, okay, how do we do this out of a central location? Like, the ramifications on that, from salary cap to how we view the games to our brethren, even though they're really not, but our microphone people that we have love for. Like, there's just so much that is really, you know, baseball is fundamentally changing their game. Hockey is not doing that, but how we fundamentally view it may end up changing.
It seems like it's inevitable. It will be super interesting, like the like 2, 3, 4 years of chaos as that's all figured out. We'll get to wrestling in a moment, people. But just the other note on that I find really really interesting is that not only is, you know, you talked about Major League Baseball potentially taking back the broadcast rights of these teams that are on Bally Sports Networks that are most likely going bankrupt imminently, we could end up in a scenario where the games aren't on cable, but they're available via streaming through MLB and then also over broadcast with this new Scripps Sports. Scripps, EW Scripps bought up a bunch of smaller over-the-air networks with the idea of maybe being a player in the sports rights business, you know, 5, 6, 10 years from now. And they're scrambling to potentially make those deals much earlier. So it could be a scenario where games aren't on cable, but they're on over the air and via streaming.
Yeah, and I don't want to look, Sinclair Broadcasting, I grew up in the Baltimore area when they owned just Channel 54, which ended up bringing in National Wrestling Alliance, Gary Jester, and all that when it stopped being a super TV network. And the strength of it, I mean, and that's what they built Sinclair out of, was that one station. And their politics are what they are, how they operate their business and who they do business is with, and their editorial policy. All of that is what it is, but they were brilliant at the fact that they continued to buy up when people were looking, you know, nationally and globally. They were buying up a lot of small channels, and I guess that's what Scripps is doing as well, too. And they did a great job when things went digital of getting those channels on everywhere, and you had these multicast channels like channel 13.2 and 13.3, and they were able to make a lot of hay out of that stuff. And Scripps, I just realized they took over a news channel, or one of them, where they're now streaming news on a regular basis. So that is very, very interesting if they're going to stick their toe in that water, because they're still going to be broadcast over the air TV. I mean, we're going to see it through our streaming platforms and through our cable in most cases. But, you know, that's as of now, it's like radio. It's always going to be there. It's a matter of how much value it has in the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, yeah, you mentioned Scripps taking over, I believe it was the Newsy channel.
That's it. Yeah. I was going to say Cheddar, but I knew it wasn't Cheddar.
Yeah. And it's interesting that it's almost a throwback to the old headline news format, where it's just really straightforward, quick hit news. So,
they did a much better job than one of your home stations in Chicago, one of the national super stations for a long time in America, WGN, which decided to go to News Now and try to play the centrist kind of more pushed right type of, you know, deal. And they have failed spectacularly and miserably. So
yeah,
I don't know if that's going to hang on for too long.
Yeah. News Nation has not gained any market share whatsoever. Ew. Other than being the, oh, what's that? As you flip by and
ew, Chris Cuomo still here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's pretty much the only purpose.
Ashley Banfield still around.
Tell you what does do a great job, Mike, of quick hitting the news each and every morning: the wrestling news.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to get that plug out of the way so I don't ramble so long at the end. But yes, the wrestling news every single day between 6 and 16 minutes. You can find out everything you needed to know. Did you fall asleep during Raw? Did you not have the ability to check what happened over in Japan? Do you want to know what's going down in Mexico? We give it all to you between 6 and 16 minutes every single day by 8 a.m. Monday through Saturday. By about 9:30 or so on Sundays. Give you some extra time to sleep in. But all of the news that you need, no conjuncture, no rumors, no nonsense, none of that sort of stuff, just who won, who lost, what titles changed hands, ratings, and that's it.
Does it have conjunctions or conjunctivitis?
It does not have either one of those things, and you better be careful about what you got on your hand when you're putting it in your eye there.
I will just completely go by that.
Oh, God, you know, I am sorry. I had a conversation, going back and forth, text with Filthy Tom Lawler today. And I had to ask him if he was jealous about not being booked in the full body hentai wrestler battle, which took place on the All-Star Junior show. And for some reason, just Filthy Tom Lawler and conjunctivitis, that seems to go together. So I don't know what any of that has to do with anything.
Maybe
but Filthy
I shouldn't
Tom's
go
Lawler,
to,
dirty.
Maybe I shouldn't go to the Observe This Brother show on March 25th for Black Label. I was thinking there was a good chance I was going to go, but if I'm going to get some pink eye, I don't know.
Well, there's plenty of other different types of communicable diseases you'll pick up there. Probably more fun, too. So I say go.
While we're getting plugs out of the way, Mike, I'll just briefly mention Wrestling at Random, the other podcast I do with my close, long-term personal friend, Jeremy Deemer. You can get that at wrestlingatrandom.com or wherever you get podcasts, most likely where you're listening to this podcast right now. And on the bonus feed, the Patreon at patreon.com/wrestlingatrandom, we reviewed a listener request of the Super J Cup 1994. So that is of relevance to Big Audio Nightmare listeners. The next free episode, again, over at wrestlingatrandom.com, goes up this Sunday. It is an episode. We review an episode of Wrestling at the Chase from St. Louis, August 2nd, I believe, 1981, which features some really good, unique promos from Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes as they head toward an NWA world title match in St. Louis, and a 20-year-old Kerry Von Erich taking on Ken Patera.
Oh, my.
It is something else seeing a 20-year-old Kerry Von Erich in St. Louis and seeing Ken Patera looking completely different physically than if you remember him a few years later from the WWF.
Now, Patera the Missouri heavyweight champion at that time?
He is not. However, you mentioned that title. We did review on the bonus feed, patreon.com/wrestlingatrandom. It was a three-match listener-requested curated list of the best of Greg the Hammer Valentine because of how much Jeremy hates Greg the Hammer Valentine. Someone paid us to watch that to troll Jeremy. And one of the matches on that was actually really interesting. I think it was from 1982 in St. Louis. I assume the Checker Dome. It was for the Missouri heavyweight title, Kerry Von Erich defending against Greg the Hammer Valentine. So it was very interesting to see, because I think a lot of us think of Kerry Von Erich as this massive star, but also, you know, a Dallas, a Texas local legend. It's so interesting to see him in his prime, in the early part of his prime, as such a big star in a different territory this time, you know, in St. Louis for Sam Mushnick. So fun show going up for free this Sunday.
That's all. It's so St. Louis. It's hard for me to say, okay, if you've never seen St. Louis, okay, go binge watch a bunch of it. Because I think for a lot of people, they'll be bored to tears because of the people that are there. You need context for a lot of it. And that Missouri Heavyweight Championship, nobody, you know, fans of today don't realize how key that was if you were able to go and play in St. Louis in front of Sam Mushnick and get over in front of that audience, and the fact that guys like Kerry Von Erich and David Von Erich and Ted DiBiase and Patera and Backlund and Flair and whoever, they had to go through St. Louis. They had to get that mark of approval before they were really stars and before they were really made men. So it's always interesting to hear about that sort of stuff, and it's great. Greg Valentine, I'm glad you mentioned him because we have done our best Greg Valentine warming up for 13, 14 minutes impression here to start this show.
Yeah, I was going to say, this almost feels like if we had our own Adam and Mike just talk about whatever Patreon. This is what it would be.
This is the Larry Zbysko Stahl edition.
There you go. The Jay White New Japan Career Memorial edition of the podcast.
Oh, man.
Because we have not done...
They're going to change his name. They're going to change his name. He's going to be Ray Knight, and he's going to end up as an LA Knight's brother or something like that on the main roster, isn't he?
God, is he going to be a maximum male model, Jay White? He does have those abs. He's got that 8-pack. Shave that beard off, and it's going to be a totally different look for old Ray Knight. It's been quite a while since we've done a podcast. Just think about the major shows that have happened. Actually, I shouldn't say quite a while, because in the history of this show, we've gone a lot longer without doing a podcast. But it's been about a little over 2 weeks, I think. And just think about all the things that have happened since then. There was Battle in the Valley, the Keiji Muto retirement show, Fantastica Mania, several Stardom shows, Yuji Nagata winning the Triple Crown for All Japan. So there are a bunch of different directions we could go, and we'll get there. But I would say, I don't know about you, Mike. Let's start with the All-Star Junior Festival, the pay-per-view on New Japan World. Because I would say, as far as things that have happened in recent days, that's by far the most noteworthy show for a lot of reasons.
Well, yeah, and you know what? It's been talked about the least, too. And we'll get to, you know, that it didn't really hurt my feelings that the way things were falling, we were probably not going to do a show right after the Muta retirement, but it's like, well, you know what? Okay. Everybody else is going to be talking about it. And pretty much they did. And when it came to the Junior Festival, I thought we were going to get a lot more talk coming out of it than we did, but I'm kind of surprised. Even some of the hardest hardcores that I would have expected would have been out there on it right away, they weren't. But in the last couple of days, I've seen more and more, and I'll admit I'm one of those people that I didn't get a chance to see it live when it happened. I had to wait a couple of days before I watched it, but damn. Oh, man, this was a good show, and you mentioned it before we came on. It's not going to last forever, and nobody's going to be completely satisfied because we all fantasize how we like our wrestling if everybody were to be working together. But with what's going on right now, with so much interpromotional going on, or at least so much threatened interpromotional, or, again, the blinders being off everyone, where I like the performative vibe of the companies all recognizing each other. And it hasn't just been, you know, the show, obviously everybody, 22 promotions working together, but with All Japan and Noah, with Noah and New Japan, with All Japan, I liked with Dragon Gate taking their little shots at New Japan. We'll get to that when it comes to Yamato later on. Like I really enjoy kind of where we're at starting the year in this post-COVID environment. You know, we were with New Japan, with Muta and all the old guys and everything with House of Torture and tired booking. Man, I hope they do something different. Damned if everybody is coming through this year overall, for the most part, at least for me.
Yeah, and on big and small scales. You talked about, you know, the Muto show at the Tokyo Dome, more than 30,000 people, a big show like this at the All-Star Junior Festival. And then on a smaller scale, seeing New Japan and All Japan work together a little bit more, particularly on All Japan shows with Yuji Nagata winning the Triple Crown. He spent, you know, the majority of his time there over the last several months. And then seeing more and more opportunities on All Japan shows for New Japan Young Lions to wrestle. So, yeah, I mean, this is, for my taste, we've talked about it over the months. Like, this is Japanese professional wrestling for me. This is one of the things that caused me to fall in love with Japanese professional wrestling more than any other, you know, whatever you want to call it, you know, territory, for lack of better form, is that the, you know, that promotions do work together. We had so little of that in recent years. And now, whether it be the Muto show, you know, this All-Star Junior Festival, what we have potentially coming up, most likely coming up next month with the big Stardom show at the end of the month with so many different wrestlers from different promotions on that. This is, I think, what we've all wanted to see. And I think coming out of this show, you know, which we'll get to in more detail, but the All-Star Junior Festival, the hope is, you know, this is an annual event. And, you know, they hinted pretty strongly on the show that not only will this likely happen again, there may be a version of this happening in the United States in 2023.
And there should be. There absolutely should be. There's no reason why there should not be. You know, the one promotion that would not send anybody, but you mentioned that's the thing you like, you know, about Japan and getting into it. And I hadn't really thought of it, but yeah, you know, the tradition of the fact that there's a backbone there where everyone is linked together and they all know that. That's why they're all in on the National Hall of Fame together. That's why you can have issues like this and situations like this. If someone passes where everyone's going to send a representative, even if company A doesn't like company D that may be on the show, they have that. And that's a great point, and that's always something to remember about Japan that differs so heavily than here. And we'll see that if the Junior Festival ever comes over here, because AEW's shown a willingness to go GCW, Defy, AEW, whoever it is, they're willing to say, hey, you know, come on in. You know, there's obviously the CMLL AAA issues, things like that would have to be, you know, adjusted, but realistically, okay, so you don't have somebody from AAA, or you only have somebody AAA, you know, associated or something like that. There's always ways to make it work where you can definitely do something like that here. To me, will it have my same interest as in Japan? Maybe not. But it all depends on who happens to be involved in it and what time of the year and in other, you know, situations as well. But I really love this for Japan.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, is and should be the first priority going forward. But it would be interesting to see how that would look for a U.S. show in terms of, like, I don't think you're going to see guys from 22 different Japanese promotions, for example, coming over to the U.S. for a junior festival. But I think you'd, you know, pretty likely see a lot of the, you know, the juniors from New Japan. You know, and then you would see, you know, you talk to AEW, Impact, ROH, you know, go on down the line from
there.
Yeah,
16 companies send two guys or whatever. Even if you looked at it that way, where it's like, okay, two ROH, two AEW, two quote unquote GCW guys who happen to be, you know, Blake Christian and Alex Zane because they're both New Japan. You know, there's ways to do it and make it work. Frankly, to be honest with you, if they ever happen to have one, I'd like to see Filthy Tom Lawler involved in it. And I know, wait a second, Mike, he's a heavyweight. No, that man's an open weight. He is a fighter. He will fight anybody. And frankly, I know that man does not weigh 200 pounds. He's under that. He knows that. I can guarantee you he would be a fine representative for New Japan Strong or frankly, New Japan to be in the juniors.
Oh, I agree 100%. And it's funny, though, you bring up open weight. It's one of the interesting things on English language commentary for the show, which was, as per usual for a New Japan show, Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton. Kevin Kelly, and I know sometimes he kind of goes into business for himself on shows, talk about the things that he'd like to see, but he was pushing very hard, you know, the idea that having junior heavyweight or heavyweight distinctions at this point in modern wrestling is ridiculous. And it's something we've talked about before as well, that they're not going to get rid of it in New Japan because you don't have a best of the Super Juniors tournament if you don't do that. You don't have, you know, a junior heavyweight title. But, you know, we've talked about before, ways to freshen things up without having to bring in a ton of different guys is making, you know, making it more of an open weight company. We see that with what they do in the United States. But, you know, I think we're still quite a ways away from seeing that in Japan. The other thing I just want to call back to, because you mentioned, you know, that this show maybe didn't have the buzz that you were expecting coming out of it in the immediate days after. I think part of that is that it was a separate pay-per-view show that you had to purchase for, you know, just under $30 on New Japan World versus, you know, something that was part of your New Japan World subscription. I think a lot more people would have seen it straight away if it had been part of the New Japan World, you know, regular monthly subscription.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I got to deal with it with, you know, we're talking about AEW this weekend and people in $50, and even if you like the card, you know, do you have the 50 right now if you have to pay taxes or this or that or whatever it's going to be? So, you know, things have not been great here. So, you know, they only need, what is it, about 135,000 people for this show to be a success. You know, that's what they need. And I look at, you know, I look at New Japan and I wonder sometimes, because I have no idea, because Bushiroad's got tons of money, but I often wonder what their idea is for buys, you know, for these standalone shows, you know, because again, all the hype for Taka, Taichi, and Despy shows, you know, both of them, you know, from this past year, it's like, man, you know, if they weren't successful, they wouldn't be doing them. You know, it's same thing with Stardom. Yeah. If people weren't buying them, then they wouldn't be doing them. But it's just, it's interesting to see that this is, you know, kind of the way it's going. And I'm also interested to see when people have kind of had enough too, because again, it's the microtransaction thing of here, you got to be a member and now pay this, you know, these are interesting because, again, this as a standalone pay-per-view not being through New Japan World and maybe through Fight and being able to be promoted by a third party may be able to help it out too.
Yeah, yeah. It's a unique time for, I think, a lot of the Japanese wrestling companies that have had these streaming services, whether it be New Japan World or Wrestle Universe, where everything was included. And then it's like, oh, we're leaving money on the table. But we can't all of a sudden, you know, we've been giving people the G1 for 999 yen. We can't just say, okay, now you've got to pay separate for every G1 show. And kind of they're splitting the difference by, you know, having, you know, Taka Taichi Mania or a show like this, or Wrestle Universe with the Muto retirement show being, a Wrestle Universe pay-per-view rather than being part of the Wrestle Universe subscription service. You know, I think it's a way of them kind of trying to claw back what I think they would have liked to do if they had thought it through initially. I do wonder, though, with the Muto retirement show and that being through Wrestle Universe, given how strong of a presence there was, particularly of New Japan on that show, and how much New Japan, you know, in the 24 hours prior to that show, pushed, if you go on their social media, including the English language social media accounts, they were pushing not only that the show is happening, but go to Wrestle Universe and order this pay-per-view. I would be fascinated to see what the cut was, how that all broke down. I would have to imagine that New Japan got at least a small cut of the Wrestle Universe pay-per-view buys for that show.
Surely, yeah. All of the business that goes into all of the stuff that took place with Muta and Noah in New Japan over the last couple of years and everything going, you know, it's would all be interesting to see, you know, fleshed out one day or have somebody to talk about that one day. And one thing that Noah also should get credit for in the, if there is any increase in people getting Wrestle Universe, is the fact that their English language team is so aggressive and they do have a public relations team and they
yes.
are trying to get out there. And there are, you know, again, I see this from the wrestling news, you know, end of things too, as well as this show where, you know, they are at least being far more aggressive than I think anybody else is right now. Certainly. And again, New Japan's in a little bit of a different position, but you know, it doesn't feel like New Japan's ever really had a American street team, and they really haven't. You know, they've had George
Kinnison. Or a strategy.
People. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, and we've had very few, you know, we had George Carroll, we've had a few Americans, and obviously Rocky being one of the main guys there, but, you know, they don't seem to have several hands out there working Twitter and working this and working that, whereas Noah seems to. And again, it doesn't hurt. I'll say that. Whether it helps or not, you know, overall is one thing, but it's damn sure doesn't hurt.
No, it doesn't hurt. And it's, there's definitely more of an intentionality on Noah's side to try to promote. I'm not talking the way the actual shows themselves, but how they get the word out about the shows. Doing so in a way that resonates, I think, more to a Western or American fan base than New Japan does, where everything they do on the U.S. side just feels like it's tacked on. It's something they do, but it's never actually the priority. I do think that if Pro Wrestling Noah's product direction matched the way they hype it in the English language audience, they'd have an even better shot of capturing fans. But yeah, I mean, you know, they got the word out about that show. It'll be interesting to see what that actually means going forward. The thing kind of to me about, you look at, you know, how those, the interpromotional matches played out at the Muto show, and then you look at the main event of this All Japan Junior Festival. The one thing that's very noteworthy is while everybody's in the sandbox playing together, it's also very clear, I guess, to mix metaphors, that New Japan is the big dog and they are exercising that power, in that you look at how Okada and Kiyomiya ended up turning out, where I think we thought, well, the way the story is going, either Kiyomiya's got to win or it's got to go to a draw. Well, they ended up doing no time limit, and Okada, after a very, very good match, obliterated Kiyomiya at the end in just under 17 minutes, which says one of two things, or maybe two things combined. A, again, that New Japan is the big dog and they're asserting that power. And B, that this New Japan Noah agreement, such as it is, must have more teeth and must have more legs, because with the amount of effort they've put into Kiyomiya, particularly over the last 6 months or so, I can't imagine they would have him get absolutely killed by Okada the way he did if there isn't a plan at some point down the line for him to beat Okada, whether that be when Okada isn't champion, when neither of them are champions. Maybe that's Kiyomiya finding his way into the G1 this year. But that did not feel like it could be the end of the story unless you absolutely wanted to kill your top young guy. I guess we've seen crazier things in modern Noah before, but that's my take on it. And then you look at the finish of the main event, again, a match here at the All-Star Junior Festival where I certainly would have preferred to see Atsuki Aoyagi go over Master Wato. It was kind of weird, Master Wato being the guy standing tall at the end of this junior festival, but it's New Japan, and they get what they want.
Well, you know what? If All Japan was booking this, then yeah. And if it happened to be on All Japan's streaming service, then maybe. But look, it's New Japan. And I agree with you on Okada and Kiyomiya, because I don't think you, to me, if you're a Noah fan, let's say you've looked at Kiyomiya like we have, and you've looked at his reign and the Muda stuff and all the stuff that's taken place in Noah over the last couple of years, and go, oh Christ, here we go, and he's going to get killed by Okada. And then he goes and gets killed by Okada. It's like, I could see those people pulling their hair out. So I'm hoping for them. They, meaning Noah, they love to see this guy struggle. They love the story of him scratching and clawing and redemption. And they love this with him. So I can't fathom him not being in the G1. I can't fathom him not having something going towards the end of this year where Okada is looking to defend that title on 1-4. But we, of course, have night 2 of Wrestle Kingdom, where we have a third year of Noah and New Japan working together, where he doesn't get his revenge either for the IWGP title or just defeating Okada flat in the middle of the ring if Okada doesn't have the title, and he does have one. That was too hot. That was too good. The interaction, everything was so good. No, it can't be it. I hope to hell that's not it when it comes to this, because this should continue. Those doors should stay wide open.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And it's also interesting on the Kiyomiya standpoint. You mentioned, you know, liking to see him struggle. That's the way, you know, Noah likes to book him. I'm just fascinated by what's coming up on March 19th, where in Yokohama he defends against Jake Lee. Because unless this Jake Lee run in Pro Wrestling Noah is going to be a lot shorter than we expected, it almost feels like Jake Lee has to beat Kiyomiya here. But if Kiyomiya loses, are we pretty quickly going into another Kiyomiya tailspin that he has to build himself back up for to get through, and then eventually beating Okada? I mean, I don't necessarily want to see Kiyomiya's reign end right now, but I don't know. It's a tricky one to book. I mean, maybe they do a 60-minute draw. We've seen Noah do that, particularly whatever they would book over the past few years, the national champion against the GHC heavyweight champion. But it's an interesting one to try to call that match on the 19th.
Well, I haven't played heavy close attention to every layer of All Japan, but you know, I do wonder what they think of Jake Lee too, because again, we were like, okay, well, GLG, this is not what we expected, but okay, well, he needs a crew. Fine, I guess he's got one, but you know, I don't know. Do they look at Lee like that, or do they just have a really good match and Kiyomiya gets the victory and you move on from there and you move Lee to something else? But I don't know. You know, I with Jake Lee, sometimes, you know, it's like I'm not the one booking him. So I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I seem to look at him from a fan's point of view and go, I wonder what's missing here or what's not happening. But, you know, again, he's just starting there for the most part, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's part of why it's so hard to pick this one out as far as who's going to win, because, you know, if he is going to say giving him a title shot this early, you seem to think, well, maybe he isn't going to win, but it also kind of feels like he has to. And then you mix in everything that happened with Kiyomiya and Okada. It's an intriguing match, but
well,
in
how about
any
this?
Event,
I mean, if he loses, does he go to All Japan for a while and mess with Miyahara?
You're talking about Jake Lee go back to All Japan
right away?
Yeah, who knows?
Did Miyahara call out Kiyomiya before he lost to Nagata?
I mean, he's called out everybody. I mean, he seems most interested in having a singles match with Nakajima.
Well, okay. So that may have been, okay, that may have been where the trajectory of where that was going. So I don't know. I do not know. You know, with Nuja, again, having the, but it's again, having the doors open to be able for guys to float in and out of places. And I tell you, the All Japan thing with Nagata really surprised the hell out of me. And that was one thing I just didn't expect. You know, I did not see that coming. I'm thrilled that it happened. It's cool, but it's, huh?
Yeah.
I'm glad he won a triple crown to win the triple crown officially for him, which he had not done. You know, a lot of people think he had, but he had never had the All Japan title.
No, he had gone through and had been the champion carnival, but never actually won the triple crown. I kind of, when the match was announced, it was kind of in the back of my mind of, well, he's been in All Japan for a while now, like the last 6 months or so, and there's got to be a reason. And so I figured it was possible, but still watching the match, which, by the way, if you've not gone back and watched that match yet, the Yuji Nagata defeating Kento Miyahara for the Triple Crown,
amazing.
Definitely do so.
Amazing.
Great match, great crowd. One of those that you're just so happy that it happened in front of cheering crowds rather than clap crowds. Definitely worth going back and watching, but yeah, it's a great, it's the gold watch, both that and Kojima in Pro Wrestling Noah with the GHC heavyweight title briefly last year. It's the gold watch that those guys just aren't going to get in New Japan the way New Japan is structured right now. And so, you know, I'm fine with guys like this that A, can still go and that B, you know, will do business, you know, when the time is right and put over the right guys. I have no problem with them going to a Noah or an All Japan and winning the championship for a while. And then putting someone over. When I see Nagata winning the belt, though, the thing I wonder is, we've talked about how Yuma Anzai is so clearly the next guy in All Japan Pro Wrestling, even with just, you know, a handful of matches under his belt. He's big. He looks great. He's really good in the ring for the very limited amount of time that he has. And from the time Nagata came into All Japan and then when Anzai debuted, Nagata's kind of been his de facto mentor. He's been his tag partner. I wonder if All Japan would try to do something a little bit different and go Supernova with Anzai and have him be the guy to beat Yuji Nagata for the Triple Crown. I mean, to me, it's either that or Yuma Aoyagi. I don't need to see, as much as I love him, I don't need to see Kento Miyahara just win the belt back from Nagata. It should be somebody that actually really gained something from that.
I like Yuma Aoyagi in that exchange. I do. And I like what you're saying too. And that would make sense. You know, after Nagata loses the belt, I would actually go ahead and do that too, you know, at the very least. But I think to me, it would be Yuma.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Aoyagi's been so close. And, you know, we've talked about for years how, you know, is there anybody, can All Japan get anyone up to be like the 1A, 1B scenario with Kento Miyahara? They tried it with Jake Lee and it worked to an extent, but I don't think he ever got to that point of being on the All Japan level, sort of a draw like Kento Miyahara is. To me, Yuma Aoyagi is by far the closest they've had to that. And each time he gets closer and closer to winning, it feels like it, you know, that builds and builds a little bit more. We'll see where that goes. It's also interesting, just as we kind of dance around things here, I'm looking at the upcoming All Japan schedule. We're talking about companies working with each other and cross promotional stuff. Got a bunch more of that coming up, even in All Japan. Shinjuku Face, Kento Miyahara against Yoshiki Inamura for Pro Wrestling Noah is the main event on that show. And then 4 days later at Korakuen Hall, it's a full show of All Japan versus GLATE. And there are some really, really tasty matches on the show, particularly the last two matches on the card. Atsuki Aoyagi against Kaito Ishida. And then Kento Miyahara, Shuji Ishikawa, Yuma Aoyagi, and Yuma Anzai against Shima, T-Hawk, L. Lindemann, and Tetsuya Izuchi. Bring that on.
Please. And you know what? Please keep promotion sending guys to GLATE. You know, we saw,
yes,
Sonata and who was it? A couple guys in there.
Sonata and Bushi were on the last big GLATE show, yeah.
In December or whatever it was, I have lost track of time, but like to see, you usually see Commander and Aries, you know, you see guys just randomly will pop into GLATE shows, and I, please, because I like watching those shows and I want them to succeed, and I don't think that they will long term, but they can as long as, you know, Lindemann and all them can have the great name and show up with shirts on and put a banner up somewhere, as long as their friends come and hang out with them. You know, we can have these shows. So, you know, I'm a big proponent of them. So I, you know, and I know what they are, though. So the more guys can come and hang out, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I agree. Talking different people coming in. Look at the opener. Takao Omori, Yoshitatsu, Black Mensuri, Rising Hayato, and Ryu Inoue against Kaz Hayashi, Yu Iizuka, Commander, Mishiko Miyagi, and Keiichi Sato.
You just shook it up. Like, whose name came out? All right, cool. All right, throw it onto that side. Whose name came out? All right, throw it onto that side.
Yeah, that's almost a randomizer pulling matches here. It is a great time, will be, at All Japan on March 18th. And then that leads into at Ota Ward Gymnasium. Yuji Nagata's first title defense. This is bordering on meaty men slapping meat style heavyweight title matches. It's Triple Crown Yuji Nagata against Shuji Ishikawa.
Nothing wrong with that.
No. It'll be a fun, hard-hitting match. A very different match as we round things back to what we started this conversation talking about, the All-Star Junior Festival.
Yeah.
I guess any specific thoughts on particular matches? I mean, to me, like, my takeaways from this show are pretty simple. I thought, and I was hoping, I was wish-casting Atsuki Aoyagi beating Master Wato. That didn't happen. I thought the main event was good but not great. I thought the best match on the show was actually not part of the pay-per-view proper. It was the special giveaway pre-show match. Yo, Soma Watanabe from GLAIT, Kazuma Sumi, one of the great rookies from DDT, against Fuminori Abe, another young wrestler from the JTO factory, if you want to call it that, Akira Jumanji, and Ryo Hoshino from 01. I love this. The crowd was red hot. Fuminori Abe in particular in there with Yo was great. So yeah, I thought that was awesome. And then the feel-good moment of this show by far was watching Fujita Jr. Hayato in there with Hiromu Takahashi and Amakusa defeating Kazuki Hashimoto, Hayata, and Yamato. Seeing Fujita Jr. Hayato out there kicking ass and being healthy and being, when I say healthy, I don't mean just via injury, via actual health. Just the more and more we can see of him on prominent shows, the better.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, as an old, you know, he means something. A lot of Zami Kodaka, a lot of these names meant something. And the biggest kick I got out of the whole thing may have been Kevin Kelly on commentary the entire time, who
yes.
I loved it because he showed his age, you know, with match game references and things like that. And also just, I don't even know who half of these people are, Chris.
Well, it was great because Chris is the expert. Obviously, he's the New Japan expert, but he, you know, he's embedded in the scene and lives in Japan and knows who most of these guys are. And then Kevin Kelly was just, he was the role of your average New Japan fan.
Yeah.
Who knows all the New Japan guys. Maybe he's heard of it. They've heard of a few of these guys, but they haven't seen 90% of them wrestle. And so he was kind of going through that as most of the fans were.
And that was great because it was a great show to watch if you are a fan. If you somehow didn't see this but are hearing us talk about it and are thinking, okay, is this like a forbidden door where one match tries to top the other one? Or you think of it like a Super J Cup or a Bola or something like that. It's not that. It was a celebration of junior heavyweight wrestling, and there was a lot of gaga and fun and different stuff, and there was a lot of great work, too. Don't get me wrong or anything like that, but this was truly a, like, celebration. And obviously, Otani and the tag team match and the proceeds, part of the proceeds and the donations and all that stuff that go to him. You know, I thought that match with Kaiwa being in there and getting the victory there, because, again, if you were from our generation growing up and you had, you know, Koji Kanemoto, Shinjiro Otani, and Takaiwa, I had completely forgot until it was mentioned on commentary the first IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Champions were Otani and Takaiwa. So,
yeah, you forget that the belts have been around for that long.
Yes, I thought that was a great moment. I can't tell you the last time I remember watching a Billy Ken Kid match, but he's out there. He and Dragon Kid walk out there, and it's like, They look exactly the same as they did 20 something years ago. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Whereas you look at, you know, because again, we can tell you when you look at, oh, I don't know, with Jin Kasai, who was never a good looking man, but I can tell you he looked a lot better, at least, you know. Not what's the word I'm looking here?
Aesthetically?
Aesthetically, yes. See? Yeah. So, and again, whereas other guys have shot, it just, it was, this was great. This was a fantastic representation of literally everything. And obviously 22 different promotions, you have 22 different styles, or, you know, you could say, and
variations,
you got all of
least.
Them. Yeah, it was great. Everybody brought something to the table.
The best thing, or I think the most descriptive thing you could say about the show is it was fun. All caps, fun. It's also, you know, if you're super familiar with, you know, all or, you know, most of the promotions on this, I think you'll really enjoy it. But it's not necessarily anything you're going to walk away from saying, wow, that was a match of the year candidate. But if you are a fan of Japanese wrestling or a fan of, like, New Japan, or you're just more of a fan of Noah, or just more of a fan of Dragon Gate, and you're really locked into your one promotion and you haven't sampled what else is out there, this was a and is a perfect show to watch to really get a sense of, you know, in some ways, at least the totality of the junior heavyweight side of the men's scene of Japanese pro wrestling. One of the other things coming out of this, I think there's a few matches you watch where it's like, oh, that's a singles match I didn't think of that I now really, really want to see. To me, more than anything on this show, the match I came out of wanting to see was El Desperado against Yuki Ueno of DDT. If someone can yes. make that happen, that feels like it could be some weird WrestleMania weekend fever dream one of these years. I want to see those two guys go at it. It's also in that realm. It's interesting when you watch, because you have the promotions like NOAH, like All Japan Pro Wrestling, like New Japan Pro Wrestling, where they have weight divisions. And then you have guys from GLATE or DDT or Dragon Gate, where it's open weight. And so it's really strange. Or even Jun Kasai. Like, it's so weird to watch Jun Kasai or Shun Skywalker or Yuki Ueno and think of them as a junior heavyweight. Because while you know they're not huge guys, and in a lot of cases they're high flyers, they're in a company where there aren't weight divisions. So you don't think of them as being, oh, they're the smaller guys. So a lot of perception things from this show. But yeah, it's, I assume at some point, Mike, it'll go on New Japan World for free to watch. Maybe that's, or as part of the subscription. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But either way, I definitely think it's something that, you know, people shouldn't just sort of let fall by the wayside with everything else that's going on.
And there were so many little, I mean, just like, you know, all, you know, everybody turning on show during that, you know, it just,
yes.
there were again, fun stuff in every match. I mean, there was, if there was ever a more classic team to put together than, forget about Imanari, but just Hikaru Sato and Taguchi together, I guess, you know, naked Takashi Sugiura could have been the only better thing to come walking out there with these guys looking like they did in the full body hentai wrestler outfits of Hikaru Sato. And I know Filthy was jealous that he could not have been a part of that team in those outfits, but that just, the match, talk about a fever dream. That was the biggest fever dream of the entire night, including the human, what the hell was it? The human scorpion, the human chain of people. What the hell was that thing called? You know, the movie.
No, if you're asking a movie, I don't.
Oh God, what was that? Human centipede. They did a human centipede spot out of the corner with guys laid out. It was quite interesting looking. But yeah, Shima and Kazuki Harada, I thought, was also, for the short period of time that it had, was very good. And I think, you know, you mentioned Ueno, the DDT guys stood out. And
like they did at the Muto show, yeah, in the sort of DDT offer match that they had, including you know, some of the young guys, which you talked about in recent episodes, how, you know, great some of those guys are right out of the chute, and how it's such a contrast to the way New Japan does things with, well, you debut and then, well, it's 5 years before I need to care about you because you're going to be taking L's.
I tell you, if they can, I know it's, you know, you need all the fingers to move to make the hand whole, but like, I look at TJP and DDT and Noah, and it's like, can you take the best of all of those and somehow make one, you know, punching fist out of it? Because
yeah,
they, again, with the doors that could be open to them with foreigners and the things that can happen there that wouldn't necessarily happen inside a more traditionalist New Japan, I don't know. We'll see what happens as years go on.
It's one of those things that will probably never happen, but you can so clearly see how that would be the way to actually have a real competitor to New Japan that could make some inroads. If you just distilled the best of the Wrestle Universe cyber fight companies into one roster, then you'd really have something to work with. But for a million reasons, it probably won't happen. The other thing I just, before we get off this show, man, whenever I see Shun Skywalker, whether it be in Dragon Gate or sometimes even more outside of a Dragon Gate setting, I see him and I'm like, good Lord, if there's ever a guy that could come to the U.S. and just become, by the standards of what non-WWE American wrestling is, a star, it's Shun Skywalker. He's so freaking good. He has such a great look, and his character is so insane and weird, but in an intriguing way. God, like there's so much more to do with that guy, whether it be in Dragon Gate or beyond. It's just going to be such a fun career to watch.
I agree 100%. And that's, he stood out, you know, and again, you had guys, it's not easy to say that Silverado Jr. is so good, you know, God, he's good. And Ninja Mac and Ishimori, I mean, he really stood out in that five-way, which it was the semi-main event.
And
which Ishimori ended up winning, by the way, and attack another one on there for New Japan.
But yeah, stealing the pin from Shun Skywalker.
Yeah, but Shun Skywalker was obviously certainly the star in that match. And I think, you know, with Mystico and the eight-man that took place before with Billy Ken Kid, we had the mix of guys there. I thought, honestly, Alejandro, if there was one person that stood out, I thought he, you know, held the flag up for Noah during this thing, probably the best out of anybody. He had the best opportunity to, with the exception of maybe Amakusa, just because he was in the opener with Hiromu.
Yeah, no, Alejandro, he's such an it's fun just watching him, because this is going to sound like a strange comp, but I'm telling you, if you watch him, and I'm not saying he's anywhere near the wrestler that I'm about to compare him to, but there's so much about how he moves, how he hits even basic moves, the wide base that he gets, the way his knees bend. He's so similar to El Generico. He's obviously smaller, but so many of his mannerisms in ring remind me of El Generico. So if no other reason than that, I always enjoy watching Alejandro mix it up.
You get me thinking of that with a stance there.
For sure. I'm telling you, go back and watch an Alejandro match. He's in there for a good like 10 minutes and tell me if you see the resemblance. Because it strikes out to me from the first time I saw him, and it still does now.
I think looking at the rest of the card, that's probably pretty much it for me. I mean, if we kept talking, we could bring up different things in different matches.
We can talk about Anru. Anru and his dust.
Well, again, yeah, talked about a show getting turned on there and everything with promotion 666, which
Kevin Kelly experiencing Anru and Ram Kai Chow was something else.
Between those two and, again, the Deguchi six man, like, if he would have been good, Kevin Kelly would have been quitting if you just gave him those two types of matches over and over for an entire show. He would have been dead throughout the whole thing, but in the little doses that he got, he was entertained by it. And again, there was so much more that to go around with everything as far as, like, you know, actual, you know, matches and real spots taking place as opposed to the comedy ones. You know, Minoru Tanaka, Sami Kodaka, Junior Fujita. I mean, that's the one thing, too. If they decide to do more of these things, I don't need to see a zillion legends come back. But if you want to have an old man 10 man, I'd be all for it.
Well, yeah, particularly with guys like you mentioned that can still really go. I think overall this show really, hopefully it laid out a framework and a foundation for something that we'll see going forward in Japan, if not also, you know, as we mentioned, potentially coming up in the U.S. as well. It certainly isn't the only thing on the immediate horizon, though, for New Japan, as we're about to enter a really busy time period as the New Japan Cup gets underway this weekend, and they have the anniversary show, which is technically not a New Japan Cup show, but it does have multiple New Japan Cup show or New Japan Cup matches on it. That show, particularly the anniversary show on the 6th, Goto and Yoshihashi against Okada and Tanahashi for the tag titles, Finlay against Ishii, Shota Umino against Yujiro. Really no interest there, but the junior special tag match, hook this into my veins, Yo and Lio Rush against Hiromu and Bushi.
I love this. I love it. And Lio Rush, I just saw he's going to be working in progress against a man called Darice. He did another, I guess we did a video for the last progress show, and he's over there, and it's like, I need more Lio Rush on tour everywhere except in the States. Just you stay out of here and keep putting on awesome matches everywhere, because they always seem to be great. There's never any drama. There's never any of that stuff. And Lio and Hiromu for the belt is going to be awesome. I see Lio pinning Bushi here, because why not? And shooting that look over at Takahashi. I am all about this. And hey, look, if you want to give Lio the win over Hiromu here, it's not going to hurt my feelings either. I love those two and the thought of them working together.
Well, yeah, and they're heading into the junior heavyweight title match on the 21st, as I would imagine the semi-main event before the New Japan Cup final. So, yeah, I'd be shocked if Lio Rush doesn't come out the victor in that match one way or the other, whether it's the more passive way, beating Bushi, or getting a pinfall on Hiromu Takahashi. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know, you look at the New Japan Cup, I mean, first-round matches are really, it's not a whole lot that I'm overly hyped about in the first round. You've got on the 5th, Naito and Phantasmo against Sonata and Taichi. That would be quite the randomizer match. Naito against El Phantasmo and Sonata against Taichi. We mentioned the matches on the 6th. Then on the 8th, Yano against Mark Davis. Ren Narita against Evil. On the 10th, Yoshihashi against Kyle Fletcher. Shingo Takagi against Hinare. That's been sort of a long time coming. Hinari maybe getting a win over Shingo, but I don't expect it to happen there. And then after that, we move into the second round, where the guys that win those matches go against guys like Kenta, Chase Owens, Goto, Tama Tonga, Cobb, Ospreay, Okan, Zack Sabre Jr., all these guys that have buys.
You know, I hate to say, I want to say I can't see me caring about this, but I have not been moved by this. You know, we got so much that's coming up here this weekend as we record this. It's Friday, March 3rd, so leading into this weekend, there's so much going on, you know, with AEW, and there's just a ton of stuff.
Stardom has a big
Stardom. It's
a huge pay-per-view this weekend, one of the best cards of the year on paper.
Yeah, and we'll get to that a little bit later on. It's just busy, where it's like, okay, you know, until the quarterfinals.
Exactly.
I know there's going to be stuff that happens, but I'm just not moved by it, especially, you know, again, we Fantastica Mania and everything else. It's just, I know I'll get into it as it goes on, but as of right now, I'm just shrugging my shoulders.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I think it's the first chance we're going to have of any potential great matches is going to be in the quarterfinals, because even when you look at the possible matchups in the second round, depending on who wins the first round against the guys that I mentioned that have buys, there's nothing that stands out as being, you know, potentially really, really good.
The best match is Tonga and Shingo. If Shingo gets by Hinari, I mean, on paper, that or ZSJ and Shota Umino. I take it back. It's really then, you know, on paper, it's Tonga and Shingo until you hit the quarters. So I again,
or Sonata Taichi in the first round.
Yeah.
That's
the
only confirmed match in the tournament so far that I actually have any interest in. Like, I know some people are saying, oh my God, Naito Phantasmo, fresh matchup, but not all fresh matchups are interesting. And it'll probably be better than I'm expecting, but it's not like I'm all like, let me pencil in some time for that one.
Because if you said this match was taking place at second from the top in wherever, Sapporo or something, on a standalone, okay, it's the first round of the New Japan Cup, so there's probably going to be shittery that goes crazy. And I like the thought of them, in a match at the new beginning in Nagoya, or if you give me a fucking, because you can tell I'm tired right now, where I can't remember obvious show names like in Kobe and things like that. But like at a pay-per-view or a big event, yes. With the way it is right now, no. I just think there's going to be too much nonsense there, so I can't be hyped about that match. To me, that's not like if you put Okada and Tanahashi there, that situation is different with those two guys. But I, again, I know what those two dudes are, and I know LP, again, he's toned it down a lot, you know, recently, but he's still, again, a lot of troll stuff in the matches.
Yeah, I have to see. It's going to take several months of seeing him in more competitive, less ridiculous matches before I'm actually like pre-excited. Like I'm completely open-minded to the match being great. And if it's great and I'm getting into it, that's awesome. But I'm not at the point to where I can be excited about a big ELP singles match going in. We'll see how it all plays out.
I love how I can't remember obvious names like Dominion or Sakura Genesis anymore. I'm just that burnt now where it's just like, I don't know, they're going to run the H2 this year.
There's... You did literally just do a show right before we recorded this.
Adam, so that this is the fourth show I've done today.
Jesus Christ. Okay, that's fair. I think everyone will give you a will give you a pass on not remembering the name of Sakura Genesis.
I think you're good.
While you're collecting yourself, I did want to mention, just calling back to, you mentioned in passing the Fantastica Mania tour. Some great stuff, particularly on the last few shows. Dave Meltzer pointed out in the Wrestling Observer today that as overall show, the second to last night, the 27th at Corican Hall, was the best show of the tour. And I would agree with that, particularly when you look at the two big singles matches, Volador Jr. against Templario, and then particularly Titan defeating Soberano Jr. for the CMLL World Welterweight title. Those were both really, really good and worth going out of your way to watch. But don't sleep on it. To me, if you're only going to watch one match from the tour, it's from the show the night before, not in Tokyo. This was on the 26th, Makuhari Messe International Exhibition Hall, match four on the show, a six-man tag, a trios match, if you will, H-Cero, Templario, and Doki against Mystico, Soberano Jr., and El Desperado. This was legit one of my favorite matches of the year I've seen in any promotion so far through the first 2 months and change. Everybody was on. Everything was crisp. The crowd was red hot. Mystico in particular looked fantastic. And as we talked about right before we started recording, I think after this tour, H-Cero might be my favorite wrestler. He is so good. He's scary. He's big. He's mean, and then he busts out a bunch of crazy, wacky lucha submissions. He is the perfect professional wrestler, and I demand that he be in this year's G1 and potentially win it.
Look at, you know, you could spend all summer long going to Wrigley Field and watching Cubs games on Friday nights, but no, now you're going to spend that time watching Arena Mexico shows and buying CMLL pay-per-views. Man.
They're picking up the pace, it seems. If this tour is any indication, I need to get back into watching CMLL more regularly, because there were a lot of guys, and you mentioned, you know, Soberano, you know, Titan, who we see a lot in New Japan already as part of LIJ. Atlantis Jr. looked really good. Like, there were a lot of guys that really, really brought it throughout this entire tour. But that match in particular, I thought was just a standout among standouts.
And obviously, probably nobody brings it more than Okamura every single year in this tournament. And
oh boy.
Why was he handcuffed so much to the caveman?
I don't know. My
tag matches, opponents with each other. There's been very little where we have not seen Barbaro Cavanario not linked in with Okamura somehow.
Yeah, my attention span waned considerably at points on shows during this tour, and I would say, you could say it peaked, or I guess more so it valleyed during Okamura matches. I've seen enough of them.
I'm not throwing shade. I'm just saying this as a fan, as far as liaisons go, Rocky Romero, a little bit higher than Okamura. That's all I'm saying.
I would say that is the coldest yet most accurate take possible. for this particular show. Before we head toward closing it out, Mike, we should talk about, and it's a little bit awkward, as you said, timing-wise, because as we record this on Friday afternoon, we're less than 12 hours from the big Stardom show coming up, the big pay-per-view taking place, as I mentioned, in just a few hours. But man, this show at Yoyogi National Stadium Gymnasium number 2, which that alone I'm hyped for, because we've talked about in recent episodes how great those crowds have been in that building since fans came back. Think back to the some of the Takatachi Mania shows that have happened in recent months there as one example. This card is loaded. We've got a bunch of undercard stuff, but then we have the two Triangle Derby semifinal matches. Nanai Takahashi, Yu, and Yuna Mizumori against the prominence team of Risa Sera, Suzu Suzuki, and Kurumi Haragi. So two outsider teams going at it in one semifinal. The other semifinal being Shuri, Mirai, and Amisore against Tam Nakano, Natsupoi, and Saki. This is one of those where I could see any of the four teams winning these semifinals, and I could see any of these four teams winning the whole tournament, which is pretty rare for, I feel like, any tournament we see in Japan or elsewhere.
Yeah, I agree 100% with you, because you can make a case for any of them, and Prominence probably the least case, you know,
because they've got the belt, so you want to create a challenger.
Yeah, and for obvious reasons here too, again, where, you know, they're not the outsider group of Impact right now. That would be 7-Up. So obviously they're over there, the Neo Stardom Army. So, you know, you have the battle of the two outsider teams, you know, leading into the other side, which, again, I could give you reasons. You know, to me, I would probably lean more towards, you know, Tam and Natsupoi and Saki, but with Mirai and again, there's ways to fantasy book three of those four teams. I think it definitely coming off the baby, you know, the baby phase, like coming off the Stardom traditional side, you could really have a field day. Cause again, there's dramas that come out of either one of those things.
Yeah. Well, and the biggest drama to come out of it, and maybe again, I'm wish casting and fantasy booking what I want to see happen in April, but I could very easily see a scenario where Takahashi, Yu, and Mizumori come out of that side. Tam Nakano, Natsupoi, and Saki come out of their side. And then we see Meltier plus Saki win in the final to set up Meltier getting their rematch to hopefully win the tag titles back in April at the big show at the end of the month.
That's what would make the most sense on paper, wouldn't it? You know, that's yeah. What, and again, sometimes the obvious thing is the right thing to do, and that would make a lot of sense. So, yeah, you don't know. And there could be, you never know. Because, again, we'll see what happens. But I'm not sure, again, too, with drama coming out of this, there's the three title matches where how many of those do you think will change?
Yeah, I mean, I would say of the three, the most likely would be the high-speed title. We'll get into it as we go through. There's one in particular that I really, really, really think a title change would be perfect and would be great, but I don't see it happening.
I know what it is, and I agree with you.
I like that tease for 2 minutes from now. But before we get to the title matches, a special singles match on the retirement road, which is paved with my tears, Himeka taking on Chihiro Hashimoto. Talk about a hoss battle, for lack of a better term. They are going to beat the hell out of each other. The thing that's really noteworthy to me about this whole deal with Himeka retiring, watching her on all these shows, watching her in the press conference, like, this is someone who, if she stuck around, she's only going to be 25 years old. She could be one of the best wrestlers in the world for a long time going forward. But watching her and seeing her demeanor, and maybe I'm reading too much into things, and I'm saying this in a positive way, she seems like someone who is very happy and very much at peace with the decision she's made. She's wrestling with sort of a lightness and a joy that I think even eclipses what we've seen from her before. I think she's enjoying, sure, it seems like she's enjoying these matches that she's having for the last couple months of her career to the fullest. But I also get the sense that she's someone who, you know, as she's saying goodbye at the end of these shows to the crowd, like, there aren't tears. She's smiling. She seems like she is 100% on board with her own decision.
Well, the show on the 26th in Kobe with Julia and Micah and, you know, with Risa Sarah and Prominence that went to the no contest, which is kind of disappointing in the hardcore match.
For a hardcore match. Yeah, what's that?
But, you know, we're still going to get Suzu Suzuki and Himeka out of that deal, you know, coming down the line here. Now we got Himeka and Chishiro Hashimoto, and I would assume that Hashimoto would win this, you know, with a resounding victory.
We haven't gotten the Hashimoto Shuri match that's coming up in April. So, yeah, I would think so.
But it should be really fun. And it'll be a little disappointing in that I will watch it and go, why can't these two continue to pound on each other and suplex each other and throw each other for a lot longer? But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is, and it will not happen again. Thankfully, a match that will happen again, particularly because it was supposed to happen a month or two ago and got canceled due to illness, we are getting another battle between, if you're longtime listeners of this podcast, particularly the last couple of years, you'll know that I am 100% in the tank for these two wrestlers as individuals, and even more so for them as opponents. To me, it is the most exciting matchup in all of wrestling. We are going to get it once more. It is Izumi defending the high-speed title against Starlight Kid. I say it probably more often than I should on this show, but here I mean it. Hook this match directly into my veins. I could not be more excited for a professional wrestling match than what we are going to see between these two wrestlers.
I was going to say, who do you think is going to win besides you? Now, besides you, because
yes, I am the winner.
Starlight had a long reign with this title, and Izumi is Izumi, and does she need this title right now? No. Does it look nice on her? Yes, it does. Does she hold it very well? Yes, she does. I assume she holds on to it here. What say you?
I would say that's probably the most likely scenario, particularly given the, you know, the borderline historic nature of her run defenses wise. It's a weird deal where, like, I could see these two wrestle in high-speed title matches sort of with that high-speed style at play for the rest of my life. But I'm also desperate to see both of them break through into potentially both the white and or red belt scene at some point. I don't know if they ever will, because I feel like we don't see wrestlers of their size in that mix.
Yeah.
But this is one of those where, like, I'm the winner. The fans are the winners. It's just going to be a great match. The match after that, the white belt, the Wonder of Stardom title, I'll preface this by saying I like Saya Kamatani. I think she's had, for the most part, a great title reign. A few matches here and there that weren't at the level of others, but I think she's been really, really good, and I think better than she gets credit for. But Hizuki, like, if you want to talk best wrestlers of the beginning of this year, and I'm not talking like wrestlers that have had a bunch of great main events, have been put in that position to succeed, but when you watch someone night in and night out on house shows, big shows, and you just watch closely the performance, the execution, the crispness, the intensity, particularly in the run-up to this match with Saya Kamatani, to me, Hizuki is in the mix for best wrestler in the world right now. She's so good, and to me, there are so many great matches that you could have with her going on a white belt title run. It's time for someone to take this belt. I don't think she's going to win. I think, as we've talked about before, it will probably end up being Mina Shirakawa or Natsupoi somewhere down the line, who would both be great Wonder of Stardom champions as well. But goddamn, would I love to see Hizuki win this match and go on to have a nice reign.
Yeah, I agree. You know, they had the match last August, which was, you know, it was good, you know, with more that they could have come from it. And we are getting that now. And I love the fact that Hizuki's back. I think she's been great. I agree with you. I would do it, but I don't know what the plan would be. Again, we've talked about Mina Shirakawa. We've talked about other people that, okay, if you are going to end this reign, you know, again, I really like her. I don't think she's going to win, but I'm with you. I I would do it here. I could do it here and, you know, have enough reasons to. She's good with, there's nobody, who has she faced and not had a good match with? You know,
that's a great point. Like,
she had Julia. She
wrestled
had
anybody.
Yeah, she's wrestled Hayashishita. It was good. She's wrestled Kamatani. It was good. She wrestled Julia. It was good. She can wrestle
high speed.
Fukigen
she Death,
had the, it's good. You know, it doesn't matter.
She had a high speed three way with Izumi and Fukigen Death. Exactly. And that was good. She might be the most versatile wrestler on what is a really deep and talented and versatile roster.
And again, you forget she was gone for so long. And it's not like she was gone forever, what was it? But it was still 2 years, but she came back.
Yeah, it's long enough.
It didn't take long to get into the swing, and I like the whole, the charisma, the presentation, that I dig her character. So, I don't know. I would love to see, just the only thing I guess really bottom line is, as a fan, is I'm hoping for just a great performance so they can keep her in the mix more.
Yeah, exactly.
Or there's
an
excuse to have her in the mix more, I should say.
100%. You know, it's, we've talked about before with crowd, you know, having cheering crowds, particularly on some of these recent house shows. I think it was the show on either the 23rd or the 25th, small show, but just a wild, rowdy crowd in all the good ways. Like, you're hearing who's really over. And Hizuki, along with Mariah, are two of the people that I think, you know, are ready for maybe a more prominent singles spot than they have at the moment. So hopefully this is, either way, win, lose, or draw, a really good step along the way for Hizuki to get into that spot.
It helps she's a little bit crazy. Because you see, crazy right now is working. If you look at the prominence, Julia, like a lot, these are different women and how they think. And Hizuki fits perfectly with that.
That's a great point. She's a baby face, but she's a baby face with an edge that you still are always like, is she going to be in Stars forever? Is she, you know, is she going to turn? It's like they're teasing that at all, but it's also very easy to believe that at some point, you know, she won't be wearing the white hat as much as she is now. So, very interested to see how that turns out. And then the semi-main event, at least as it's listed right now, is the World of Stardom title match. I don't necessarily think that the result is in doubt, but I am still hyped for this. It's Julia against Mayu Yukiha. Yukiha, to me, has been the star of the Triangle Derby. It's been filled with a lot of very good matches, but I don't think anything that really jumps beyond that. But her performances, particularly early in the tournament, like, you can see it's someone who is motivated, someone who's out to, on multiple levels, prove a point to Stardom fans. Use the word war, but I fully expect this to be this to be a violent match more than a, hey, let's just, you know, do some arm bars type of match. They're going to beat the holy hell out of each other.
Is she looking for a job, or is she fine just kind of, you know, cruising the earth right now?
Well, I think, that's the big question. I mean, could they pull something out of their hat and have her win the title? I mean, she's everywhere. We saw her on on that Noah show a month or so ago. She came over and wrestled in the U.S. some. We're seeing her here on, you know, here in Stardom. Who knows?
I'd love to see her in the mix more, just kind of, you know, floating in and out. Again, I don't know exactly what her, again, there's so many people have so many, you know, the ability to just kind of, you know, carve their own path, and she's obviously one of them. And I think it's going to be really, it's going to kick ass, and it's going to be physical as hell, and there's going to probably be a lot of cringeworthy spots. And again, this is much like Suzu Suzuki. I like the first two title defenses for Julia, which on paper you say there's really no way she's going to lose these, but I'm interested in the matchups. You know what I'm saying? Like, they've done a good job there, at least with, it's not, and this is no offense, but they could have done Momo Kogo as a first defense and done whatever, you know what I mean? They could have done anything, but I've liked these first two title defenses.
Yeah. I've kind of come around to your thinking on that. We talked about on the podcast before. It's the only thing I was disappointed about with the Suzu Suzuki match, that I felt like it was happening too early on in the rain. But if it's going to be a long rain, which it feels like it's going to, given the runway that we are on to get to Julia winning the red belt, and you know how big of a star she is, there are kind of a couple options. It was, like you said, have, you know, obvious title defenses early on, like, you know, she defends against Ami Sore, or she defends against Koguma, you know, people that have some credibility, but you don't expect them to actually win. Or you take some of these outsider defenses that maybe in one sense would have had more drama later in the reign, but you put them earlier in the reign and they at least have more drama or intrigue than one of those kind of throwaway defenses that I mentioned earlier. So yeah, I'm coming around to your point of view. I won't say that very often. I've said it. That's actually scary because it kind of bookended the podcast by me saying I'm happy for you getting Patrick Kane on the Rangers. And then I'm saying you were right about this. What the hell is going on?
Well, look, I mean, look, the next month, there's a lot of shit going on. And with Cinderella, with the new blood tag tournament, with coming off the Triangle Derby, like, you know, once we get Himika's retirement, you know, then I think the year begins. You know what I mean? I think then we're going to have a better idea as far as, you know, some of the, again, there's just so much going on right now. And obviously there's little things that, you know, are interplaying themselves as far as personal feuds and conflicts and things like that. But I still think we're probably a month away before, okay, I wonder, let's see what's set up. Who is going to be the first one for Julia and the first basically quote unquote feud, you know, long title kind of picture here leading into it against another heavy hitter from Starb, somebody that somebody believes may have a shot. You know what I'm saying? I've saying so much. I'm turning into fucking Alvarez. Fuck.
I think it, as I hurriedly try to figure out how to add the explicit not for 18 under tag to the podcast.
I'm sorry.
It's all roads lead to April 23rd All-Star Grand Queendom at Yokohama Arena. I think people have, you know, been saying, well, you know, is it the show at the end of the year? Is it this show? Is it that show that, you know, is Stardom's Wrestle Kingdom? Well, it's pretty clear that All-Star Grand Queendom is going to be that show. It is going to be the biggest show in Stardom history. I think everything we're seeing now is going to lead into that. And I think to your point, kind of the new year for Stardom will flow out of that. You know, there's reports floating around from Dave Meltzer that, you know, maybe the idea for All-Star Grand Queendom is Julia against Tam Nakano, for the red belt, you know, in addition to Mercedes Moné, who, you know, we're not going to spend a ton of time on it, but just had that great performance against Kairi at Battle of the Valley. Mm-hmm. Very impressive that, you know, once she gets through, presumably it sounds like the talk is her and Izumi on a New Japan show. And then after that, if plans hold, you'd have, you know, the Mayu Iwatani, Mercedes Moné match being one of the main events at All-Star Grand Queendom, in addition to Himeka's retirement match, in addition to Shuri versus Chihiro Hashimoto. So yeah, that certainly is shaping up to be a massive, massive show coming down the line.
I like April, December. You know, I like that because December is always going towards the end of the year and going towards the January 4th. And just with what the show has meant to people over the last 2 years, that Stardom December show at the end of the year is always going to be big, but I like they're away from WrestleMania. You know, the May New Japan show, it was Dominion, brain lock. But again, you know, that's a little bit further away. This could be a nice little spot to fit in as you continue to grow too, you know, away from the fourth. And we're now a full 90 days away from everything that took place. This could be a great time as you're growing to, again, April 23rd is always Stardom, you know, Grand Queendom season, and, you know, and just plant the flag now. And if they have, again, you already have the Himeka Micah retirement, which is going to get a lot of diehards and hardcores already are going to be, you know, in their feels about that match. You have a Julia title defense. And then again, Mayu and Mercedes, where if things aren't going to continue on with Mercedes, again, just because for whatever reason, you know, even if they are, her winning that, Mayu winning the belt there would be great because Mayu winning, Julia winning, again, to have them kind of eyeball each other up in their own realms every once in a while as they continue on through the rest of the year, I think that could be the way to go because, again, Kairi doesn't, how much are you going to continue to pay her? What is it worth? There's a lot to me that, you know, is still up in the air about the former Sasha Banks as far as her being a regular player there. But, I mean, Mayu Iwatani with that IWGP belt just also makes a lot of sense.
Well, yeah, and particularly if the reports of that being the initial plan, are true, you know, you're kind of in a best of the both worlds scenario. If Mercedes Moné is going to stick around, well, then yeah, you have her win and she moves on, and we see who else she can defend against. Obviously, there's a wealth of potential opponents. If she's not going to stick around, well, what better person and what more stable person to put that belt on than Mayu Iwatani? I could very easily see something later in the year where, whether it's Mercedes or Mayu or whoever, them doing an IWGP women's title versus Red Belt World of Stardom Championship that goes to a draw, maybe the first ever 60-minute draw in Stardom history, you know, if you want to get some buzz around that. To me, the only other Stardom kind of point that I have in my mind is I'm just wondering if and when we're going to start to see any steam being put back on Utami Hayashishita, because she's been pretty back burner as of late. Yeah, she had a couple title shots last year, but they were pretty obvious she wasn't going to win. She had the match against Shuri, but she really doesn't have, you know, hasn't had a whole lot of direction. Maybe more than anyone, I'm really intrigued to see where they go with her heading into the big show on April 23rd.
Yeah, good question. That's a really good question there too, because again, she's not going to be hanging out there at the bottom for too much longer. And again, again, depending on what you want to do with the IWGP title, how many times it's going to be used, because I see Sasha losing it because, again, just logistically, you know, how many times is she going to work? Or what would she need the belt for? Forbidden Door? You know what I mean? To defend it there and then lose it there. So it's, you know, Mayu winning that, and then is that, that's how she to want to go after that? Or I don't know. I don't know. They're just, it's an embarrassment of riches, obviously, throughout the layers of the card, but certainly at the top of the card, you know. Again, this is where I don't love the fact that they're running so many pay-per-views, because, you know, you got to pay for them. But like, I do the increased exposure, the more cards, the more stuff, I, you know, I'm all for it.
Yeah, there certainly is. There's not a drought when it comes to possible matches that you could put together. They have enough combinations and enough people, both in-house and people they bring in to fill things out. I guess my only other thought just on the IWGP women's titles, if I'm going to make a bold prediction, I would say at some point in the next 3 years, and probably sooner than that, I guess you'd have to have some gap between the white belt reign and this. But considering how strongly Saya Kamatani has been pushed on the New Japan shows where Stardom had offer matches, I would be surprised if at some point in the not cosmically distant future, we don't see Saya Kamatani holding the IWGP Women's Championship.
I'd be okay with that. I'd actually be okay with that. If that's what they would like more, because again, I will say the same thing I have, but I do like her more than you, but of the top tier, she's probably the one I'm picking, you know, fourth or fifth, you know, of the food chain there. So again, doesn't hurt my feelings if her coming over here to represent and work New Japan shows here or weekends or things like that, her getting out of Japan, I think, would not be the worst idea in the world. You know, to go to, I don't know who they work with, whether it be Eve or whoever in the UK, like, her getting out and going some other places would not be the worst thing in the world.
You know, getting experience against a different type of opponent.
And I know that's taking her right away from, you know, putting her on some New Japan shows to, like, getting her out of there altogether. But of almost anybody, like, she really could use a good excursion if there were really good people that she could work with. This is where I miss Shimmer.
Yeah, no, that, oh God, yeah, that is a fantastic point. Sky point for Shimmer, miss it every day. On that note, as we usually start to do around an hour and 45 minutes in the show, as we both start to stumble over our words, or maybe I'm just speaking for myself, we should close it out.
Are you kidding me? I started this show with Ariso Shikiki just kicking me in the face. So, God, I miss her too. Nobody threw a question mark kick like her. I love question mark kicks. It was so awesome, but
she's so good. Anyway. So good.
So yeah, as I mentioned earlier on, this was my fourth show today because I got up and did the wrestling news, and I hyped that up a little bit earlier on, but then I made a stop off for my homies over there at the Black Wrestling Podcast, Bulls in a China Shop. If you're a member of the Black Wrestling Patreon, it's only a dollar, folks. We'd like you to pay 10, but it's only a dollar to get you in the door. A ton of content up there, including myself, Vin Forte, Cal, all the homies in there. So we got that show I did earlier on, obviously Wrestling Observer Live. I got this one. And then what I really wanted to tell you guys about, the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast Patreon, which is patreon.com, / Mid-Atlantic Podcast, $5, get you in the door. Just sacrifice that half pint of vodka you are going to drink. Just sacrifice that upsizing on the McDonald's you are going to get. Forget about the venti Starbucks for just one day. Spend that $5 over at the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast. A ton of old school stuff up there. Plus, you just get to support me, but I try to give you things as well too. Old programs from over the years, old video of wrestling shows that you may have not have seen for a long time or maybe never at all, and I try to educate you as well too. I have over there Grit and Glory, the history of Jim Crockett Promotions, tag team wrestling, going back to the 30s, everything you ever wanted to know about the creation of tag team wrestling and Jim Crockett Promotions and how we got to teams not only like Steamboat and Youngblood, not only like the Rock and Roll Express, but teams like FTR, the Young Bucks, the Briscoes, the teams of today all have their bloodlines. They go through Jim Crockett Promotions, but brand new for those people over there. First, see, I'm killing myself today. Wahoo McDaniel makes the American Indian a first-class citizen, super chief, for only $5. It's a 4+ hour podcast that I did with a written piece alongside of it, a shoulder piece I did as well, too. Over 4 hours of stuff going back to the 70s, 1975, the earliest audio some of you will ever hear. You're not going to hear it anywhere else except for on this podcast, where I just take you through the heel turn of Wahoo McDaniel in 1984 and 85 and all the backstory that goes around it. It is a great story about booking. It's a great story about characters. It's a great story about credibility. It's a great story about a whole lot of stuff, and I am really proud of, I'm really happy about it. If you're listening to me right now going, you sound like you're drunk and having a stroke, why would I like this? I don't sound like that on the podcast, I swear. So Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast Patreon over there. But and I saw Wrigleyville Nation just pop up there, so I'll shout them out too. But I'm tapping out right now, Adam. The Gatorade isn't working. The caffeine hasn't worked, and I'm out of work right now and out of gas.
I am right there with you. I mentioned earlier Wrestling at Random. You can find that at all the places I mentioned an hour and a half ago. So with that, we'll close it up. Thank you, Mike, for doing your fourth show of the day here with me. And yeah, we'll be back soon.